Brown against Polk County is next on for argument.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Mr. Moncio.
This is Vince Moncio for the plaintiff appellant, Darren Brown. This case presents two overarching issues for the court, although there are many subparts to each of them. But the two overarching issues are, one, what is the applicable standard to be applied for a cavity search of a pretrial detainee being held in a jail? Is that reasonable suspicion, probable cause, or is a search warrant required? The district court found that reasonable suspicion was the standard to be applied. The second issue is whether there are material questions of fact that should have precluded summary judgment, even if this court agrees with the district court that the proper standard is reasonable suspicion. The district court adopted the reasonable suspicion standard, relying on this court's precedents in cases involving visual cavity searches and strip searches. Those are cases such as the Freeman case, the Mary Beth G case, Campbell, etc. Those cases did not involve the type of intrusive physical cavity search involved here. At a minimum, such an intrusive search should require probable cause. In my brief, I cited numerous cases regarding physical cavity searches.
Counsel, I'm a little puzzled about which part of the Constitution you're relying on. Probable cause and warrants are usually associated with the Fourth Amendment. Are you relying on the Fourth Amendment?
Yes, Your Honor, we are, and that's the case was sued up under the Fourth Amendment, and it was argued on summary judgment on the Fourth Amendment precedent.
I know you're relying on Fourth Amendment precedent. Anyway, go continue, but a lot of your brief sounds like it's based on the Fifth Amendment, or technically the Due Process Clause of the 14th.
Well, I believe what we have, Your Honor, what we have here is a 1983 case that is based on the allegation that there was a deprivation of constitutional rights. And the way we pleaded the case out from day one is that that was a deprivation of the Fourth Amendment right to be free of an unreasonable search or seizure. And those Fourth Amendment rights have been discussed in numerous cases involving searches within jails. Here, the distinction between this case and the cases that both the defendants and the district court rely on is that this is an intrusive physical cavity search as opposed to a mere strip search or a visual cavity search. Our position, Ms. Brown's position, is that when you get to a physical cavity search, that search is of such an intrusive nature, and it has been described in many cases, again cited in the brief, as just about the most intrusive search that a human being can be subjected to. And it's the humanizing nature of actually having a physical prodding of the most intimate body cavities that, in this case, a woman possesses. When you have that type of an intrusive search, the case law is that you start out with the balancing test. And even the defendants admit that the more intrusive the search, the more you slide away from reasonable suspicion and into probable cause, and then theoretically, potentially even into the need for a search warrant.
Mr. Moncio, it's Judge Scudder. I want to, just because of our limited time, I want to focus on the point that you just raised. Suppose that I agree with you that probable cause and not reasonable suspicion is the proper substantive standard. The question I have from there is, why shouldn't the special needs exception apply with respect to the warrant requirement in this context?
That's exactly where I was just about to go, Your Honor. The defendants say that regardless of that sliding scale that I just laid out, that you look at the Skinner, the so-called Skinner special special needs exception. First of all, the defendants cite Skinner and then say that it gave a nod to the whole Wolfish-Bell exception for a search. The problem there, however, is that Wolfish-Bell was a case that, again, involved a non-physical search. So we really don't have any precedent that tells us that the Skinner special needs exception should be employed where you have this type of horribly intrusive search. Taking the defendant, I don't even have to say taking it to its logical extreme, because at face value, the defendant's argument is that you basically are going to throw the balancing test out, and that the only question to be asked is whether or not this happened to an incarcerated person where there's an issue of jail security. And if it's true that there is an issue of jail security, then anything goes. It's hard to imagine if this search, this type of search, it only needs reasonable suspicion. It's hard to imagine what type of search would require more. So we would now be applying the so-called Skinner special needs exception to every single type of search that occurs in the incarcerated situation. That, I think, is the issue that this court needs to decide, whether or not that special needs exception goes beyond the strip search and even beyond the visible cavity search to the intrusive type of prodding that occurred in this case. That's that issue in a nutshell. Moving to the second issue, if I may, we believe that taking a look at the factual record here, even if this court were, and I believe it would be a mistake, but even if this court were to adopt reasonable suspicion with regard to this type of search, that there were material issues of fact here as to whether or not the jailers had that reasonable suspicion, based on all the contradictions in the testimony, based on the absence of, in particular, any type of evidence that there was contraband being anally hidden. Ms. Brown was sent to the hospital to have a cavity search of both her vagina and her anal cavity. There is no evidence in the record that she had contraband. As it turned out, she had no contraband at all, and it was all based simply on
counsel.
You
have 2 minutes
up,
left.
Hold on, Mr. Macho, it's Judge Scudder again. I need to interrupt you there. When you say no evidence, I mean that is categorical, unequivocal. And what do you say about the nurse? I don't remember her name. Is it Johnson or something? The nurse's discussion, not with inmate Duke, but with the other inmate. Now, I understand that you might not think that evidence should be credited. You might not think it's sufficient. But I don't know how you can argue that there is, quote, no evidence, unquote.
The other inmate was inmate Nelson. Inmate Nelson never told Nurse Johnson that the contraband was being anally carried. The totality of the evidence on this issue, and forgive me if I overstated it when I said no evidence, but here's the totality of the evidence on this issue. Jail Administrator Revels said that he did not believe he testified that he believed the search was authorizing a vaginal search. CO Hillishein, who asked for the search, testified that he was asking for a vaginal search. The other evidence, both from Johnson and others, is that, and this is recorded in the so-called contemporaneous documents that the district court relied on, is that there was contraband hidden in a body cavity. Rather than taking that evidence in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, the district court took that evidence in the light most favorable to the defendant. The district court categorically ignored, and even stated that it was ignoring the deposition testimony and instead was going to look at contemporaneous documents that it admitted were not specific but were nonspecific. So rather than taking the specific deposition testimony that said,
Thank you, Mr. Mocio.
For a vaginal search and that's what was being authorized.
Thank you, Mr. Mocio.
I'm sorry?
Your time has expired.
I am sorry. Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Tierney.
Good morning. Danielle Baldwin Tierney for the defendants, appellees, Polk County, CO Lee, CO Hillesheim, Chief Deputy Rebels, and the CO John Doe's 1 through 10. I want to first start with the question that was just being discussed, the question of fact with respect to where the contraband was allegedly hidden. Plaintiff's counsel has suggested that there is no evidence in the record to suggest that the alleged contraband was contained anywhere else other than in plaintiff's vaginal cavity, such that an anal cavity search was not required. To the contrary, there's actually no evidence in the record other than an assumption by Chief Deputy Rebels that the contraband was solely alleged to be contained in plaintiff's vaginal cavity. Testimony, or I should say the affidavit that was submitted from one of the informants and the testimony of Donna Johnson, the nurse, and of the reports that are contemporaneous indicate that the alleged contraband was hidden in a body cavity generally. There's no reference to one body cavity over another. There's no indication that the only body cavity that needed to be searched was plaintiff's vaginal cavity. Although there was testimony from Chief Deputy Rebels that he assumed that the request was for a vaginal search rather than vaginal and anal, he admitted that it was based on nothing other than his own assumption. There was no information that he received from CO Hillesheim, who was the one who spoke with Chief Deputy Rebels to request the search to support that assumption. So in this case, the only evidence that we have from the individuals who were taking the information from the informants and who documented that contemporaneously with those documents that are in the record is that a large amount of methamphetamine was reportedly hidden in plaintiff's body cavity. So there's no evidence to indicate that one cavity over another should have been searched and another cavity shouldn't. Going back now to the first question or the first point that plaintiff's counsel had raised with respect to the applicable standard for the pretrial detainee cavity search, there is no case law in this circuit or any other circuit that's been cited by the plaintiff to suggest that a pretrial detainee body cavity search needs to go to a higher standard above and beyond reasonable suspicion. As we pointed out in our brief, each one of the cases that were cited by the plaintiff to support a standard above and beyond reasonable suspicion all relate to cases involving a criminal defendant or evidence in a criminal case, such that when you do that balancing test, the different governmental interests are weighed differently. When you're weighing whether or not to intrude and conduct what is admittedly a very intrusive search, weighing in favor of the governmental interest in obtaining evidence for a conviction is different than weighing the governmental interest in protecting an inmate or a pretrial detainee who is in custody of the governmental entity. And as the defendants pointed out in the response brief here on appeal, the court should be weighing in favor its duty and obligation to keep these pretrial detainees safe when also assessing whether or not to send somebody out for a search based on information that they receive.
Ms. Tierney, and what do you make of Ms. Tierney, it's Judge Scudder. What do you make of the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Winston versus Lee and its emphasis in Florence in 2012? I understand Florence is a different set of facts because it's one of these, you know, visual strip searches, but that there was no touching involved. It's the combination
so
of
Winston,
it's the combination
we,
of Winston and Florence.
Out, oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. So Winston is involved whether or not police were authorized to compel a suspect to undergo surgery to remove a bullet that was then going to be used against him in a criminal trial. So again, the interest there in removing the bullet was to obtain evidence to ultimately obtain a conviction against the defendant. So they would be compelling him to remove evidence from inside of him, going into a cavity or into a search inside the body to then be used later against the defendant. There was no governmental interest in the safety or security of other individuals or of that specific individual such that the governmental agency had a duty to protect that individual. So I think Winston is distinguished in that you've got two different competing governmental interests at stake. So we argue that Winston isn't applicable because we're not dealing with the same governmental interest. All of the other cases cited by Brown in her initial brief fall under that same line as Winston. They all deal with criminal cases where there's no governmental interest in safety or protection. Plaintiff's counsel suggests that this kind of opens the door and suggests at any time there is an arguable basis for safety or security concerns that a governmental agency, a jail, would be able to force a pretrial detainee to go subject to a very intrusive search. And I would suggest that I think that takes it a little too far. The reasonable suspicion standard still requires that there be a basis for the search. They can't simply cite safety and security without articulable facts to support that concern. So I think it still strikes a good balance, and we're not going to see all jails suddenly open up to requesting reasonable or requesting cavity searches based on nothing other than a concern for safety and security generally. But even if that were to be the case, you look at the case decisions in Bell and in Florence, and arguably the court has set forth a standard such that as long as there is some articulable basis for safety and security, these searches have been permitted absent reasonable suspicion.
Hold on, when you say these searches, when you say these searches, you're talking in very broad terms. You mean visual inspections of pretrial detainees or the kind of search that Ms. Brown underwent here? There's a difference in the case law.
So the court in Bell and Florence did only address the visual cavity searches, but it's our position that although there haven't been any cited cases or any cases that I think I've been able to locate or counsel's been able to locate that deal with manual cavity searches of pretrial detainees, I think the case law extends to a natural point that would permit manual cavity searches in cases upon reasonable suspicion. And I want to also point out there was a decision out of the Seventh Circuit whereby I believe it was Judge Posner in a concurring opinion noted that yes, it was in Johnson versus Phelan, 69 Federal 3rd, 144. It's a Seventh Circuit case from 1995. Judge Posner, in his concurrence and dissent, noted that Bell versus Wolfish actually held that pretrial detainees may be subjected to, and he used the words digital and visual inspection. In this case, it was of a party's rectum for searching for contraband. So Judge Posner implicitly acknowledged that Bell should be extended above and beyond the visual inspection. And I think by imposing the requirement for reasonable suspicion, it doesn't just open the floodgates to permit everybody to undergo these searches without a basis. It protects the rights of the detainees insofar as the Fourth Amendment requires a reasonable search. But it still allows the jails and the governmental agencies to be able to fulfill their duty and their obligation as to protecting the inmates and other inmates involved.
You have 1 minute left.
I see that my
left.
Time is almost up, but if the court has any further questions.
All right. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.